Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you just after 9 o'clock. We are live in the studio every week, and we love talking with you, answering questions, and finding out what's going on with your health. My name is Lynette, here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, and we're talking about those, well, bacteria in our bowel, and how, what did you say we were? Mostly bacteria.
We are mostly, well, there's more of them than there are the rest
okay.
of us.
Okay, yeah. Wow.
We are actually outnumbered in our own bodies.
By bacteria?
By the bacteria. And they are having a big impact on how well we do because our cells are taking up this messenger RNA and chemicals released by their cells.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we are identifying patterns and which organisms we want to have and which organisms we don't. The problem is getting the stuff that we want where we want to have it. Now, for instance, several years ago, probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago at least, when they were doing the very earliest research on this, they found, for instance, people that had certain forms of colitis, of bowel disease that was really making their life miserable and setting them up for all kinds of diseases, had very different bacteria in their colon than other people. So what they did is a very crude experiment. They went in and they collected poop from people that were healthy, and they mixed it up in a blender, put it in a slurry, and actually gave it to the people in an enema. And they pushed the bacteria from healthy people's poop into the rectum of people with unhealthy poop.
Okay.
And it helped. It actually turned out that their bowel diseases started resolving, and they got better from a whole lot of ways. And so they say, well, that's really interesting, but, you know, poop transplants are really not practical for most of us. There's a certain ick factor, if nothing else. So, you know, not going to become popular. And we can't get those bacteria down through the mouth very well because the colon, the large bowel, has almost no oxygen in it. It's an what we call anaerobic state. It has very, very low oxygen tensions, and it's slightly alkaline. But when you give anything to someone as a pill or a drink, it goes down into the stomach, which is a very powerful hydrochloric acid solution, and it kills the vast majority of the bacteria. And then they've got to get through the small bowel before they get to the large bowel, which is where the real food sources and stuff are for the bacteria. So things we give people orally don't usually do the job. And most of the so-called probiotics from lactobacillus, that is the things that we do for making cheese and yogurts.
Okay.
You're not making cheese and yogurt in
your
bowel.
Okay,
no.
That's good.
And so the problem is the bacteria that we take from cheese and yogurt and so on that we take as pills and we put it down there, it's the wrong bacteria. We need healthy poop bacteria.
Yes.
And so the question is, how do you grow the bacteria without oxygen? Okay, because oxygen kills most of them. So, because they're obligate anaerobes. So you can't let them come in contact with air while you're growing them. You have to put them in the pills. You have to put them in the bottle. You have to get them sent to the warehouse and then finally to the people, all without air or oxygen getting to them. Then you've got to get them through that high acid environment to get them down into the gut to start with.
Okay.
That's complex. That's tough. So A, we got to find the right bacteria. B, we've got to find ways to keep them healthy and living until we get them where we want them to be. There's not a lot of people doing that very well. There's a lot of, once more, research going on. And there are some interesting concepts. There's one company I've come across that has a mixture of 24 different bacteria. As I do the research on their bacteria, they tend to be very good bugs that we want to have in our colon. So they're selecting 20 some of the very best bacteria that we want to put down there. They then put them in a pill. They grow them anaerobically, that is without oxygen.
Okay.
They put them in a nitrogen-filled pill. And then they put the nitrogen-filled pill, which keeps the oxygen out, into a acid-resistant pill.
Oh, okay.
So you got a pill in a pill. Okay. And so then you swallow the acid-resistant pill, and it gets it through your stomach into your bowel.
Okay, makes it through the acid.
Yeah, and then once it gets into a relatively anaerobic environment, the second one starts to dissolve and starts to release the bugs.
Okay.
Works pretty good. Problem? You got a really big pill.
Oh, really?
You don't just have a pill. You have a pill in a pill.
Ugh.
All right. So it's not ideal.
Okay. Bigger than a fish oil or a lecithin or a
I think
the horse pills we talk about.
Yeah. So anyway, these are things.
Idea.
Yeah. What's your idea?
Well, the coming centuries are going to promote research in orbital space. So it's going to become more cheaper for us to build. Mm-hmm. Settlements in orbit around the Earth and around the Sun. And these are oxygen-free areas.
True.
So the vacuum of space may make research in oxygen-free environments easier, less expensive.
That's true. Musk is making great progress with reusable rockets that cut the cost dramatically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're heading in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Elon Musk has really impressed people with his changing of theory into reality.
Yes, he has. Anyway, what else did you want to ask or talk to me about, my friend? We've probably got other callers waiting.
Yes, we do.
So we need to keep moving here.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've reached 85 years, so I only have 115 more years to my goal of 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
What I've done, I've done exercise and I've kept my weight down. Those are the two principal things I used to make it to 85.
And those are important.
That's good.
Things.
Those are good things.
Those are two very good things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you'd like to become a patient over at Longevity, we'd like to help you do a lot of the other stuff that
absolutely
need to be done.
I think that's something I should probably look into.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sir,
yeah.
You can go to our website, lmclinic.com, and set yourself up for a free health analysis appointment. We'll take a look at you and go over your history and see what we can do to maybe start you on the right path.
Yeah. Now what type of research will make it easier for people to live longer?
I guess
you'd probably talked about that a lot in the past.
These are things we chat about a whole lot. And, you know, we've just been chatting about the bacteria, but the rapamycin, the drug that the fellow before you called about, and we use rapamycin with a lot of our people. We also, of course, have anti-senescent cell therapies because, when we get a chance here in a bit, when somebody makes an appropriate question, I'll talk about senescent cells. So you might want to hear that too. That's an important aspect of aging and vitality.
It was good talking with you.
Yes, thank you for your call.
I'm glad I tuned in today.
Absolutely.
Right. Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Very good.
Bye now.
Well, all right. And we hope you become a patient at Longevity. We are still offering that free health analysis appointment, which is really a way for you to kind of a bridge to get you into our Longevity clinics. Of course, we have three, Kirkland, Linwood, and in Tacoma. And by coming in, you'll do just a couple of little tests, a blood test for your A1C and an in-body test.
In-body, which will measure percentage of fat versus muscle mass and intracellular versus extracellular water. And between those things, we get a pretty good idea of your overall risk pattern. And then if it looks like things need to be improved, we'll go ahead and recommend that you get the full panel, which will get you a big lab panel, about a 70-some page printout that will run tests your family doctor has never done. And that'll give us a lot more detail about what's going right and wrong in your body and give our doctors a better chance to figure out what you're going to need to have a long, happy, robust, joy-filled life. And that, after all, is what we're really after.
That's the goal. Yes, we want you to be stronger.
Faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier.
Happier, absolutely. Here is that number to call. We want to get you scheduled today if you can. It's 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, and you will see Dr. Mixon's face there, as well as lots of information on the different things that we talk about, the supplements that we have, and a big calendar there where you can schedule a time to come in, talk with our doctors, meet the folks, check out the clinic, and find out what's going on in your body so we can find out and get you started so that you can live a healthy life as you age. That's what we're after. LMClinic.com. That's LMClinic.com or 1-866-86-YOUNG is the number to call right now. All right. We are going to take a quick call here before our break and at least get our question. Lee calling from Bellevue right now. Hi, Lee.
Hello, Lee.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. How can we help you, sir?
Well, you've spoken many times about the cancer test that you do.
Uh-huh.
I believe 50 different strains that you test for.
That's right.
Oh, the Galleri test.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, I recently got treated for prostate cancer, and then my naturopath suggested I do the Greek cancer test.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with that, and how does it compare with the one you give?
Well, there are a variety of cancer tests, especially that are focused towards prostate. The Galleri test is a screen. It's not a diagnostic test. It is looking for proteins released by cancers into your bloodstream. And it will do a very good screen for 50 different tumors, which is, you know, the most that we have anywhere in the country. I mean, nobody does more different tests. But on the other hand, there are tests we can do that are more precise for some particular diseases, such as prostate cancer. So the Galleri is not the best test to see if your prostate cancer is reoccurring or if your colon cancer is reoccurring. There are more focused, more accurate tests if you know what cancer you're shooting for. So for a broad spectrum screen, Galleri is number one. For focused look for a particular tumor such as prostate, there's better stuff to be done. And
yes,
so that's, I think, what your other doctor is talking about. He's looking for something that is specific for your prostate.
Yeah, and Lee, why don't you stay right there, and we'll talk more about this. We'll take a quick break, and we're back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Here is that number to call and get through. Phone lines are open for you, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there, and good morning. I'm your host, Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, and we are talking about the Galleri cancer test and also what would be best for finding out about prostate cancer.
And so, you know, someone that's had a prostate cancer, we know what tumor we're looking for, although Galleri is still useful. Because there's an old adage that says cancer formers form cancers.
Yeah. Okay.
People that have one autoimmune disease, if you watch them closely, they average having 3 to 5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
People who get one cancer are very high risk of getting other cancers, not just reoccurrence of that one, but other cancers. The fact that you have getting a cancer says that your immune system has failed to find and destroy that tumor when it first formed. And so you've already got a defect going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to watch for other cancers in addition to reoccurrence for the one you've got. But if your concern is reoccurrence of that specific one, then there's a lot of stuff that we can do. For instance, there's an Oncotype DX test. There's a Polaris test. There's a PSMA biomarkers. When it comes to prostate cancer, the researchers have come up with all kinds of genetic and protein markers that can be followed to see if this tumor is reoccurring. And we will often see proteins in the bloodstream start to rise long before we actually see the tumor itself, because they start releasing those proteins into the bloodstream long before the tumor is big enough for us to see it with our imaging.
Okay.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. For one thing, I think I misstated something, because I was treated. My PSA went from 4.2 to 0.8.
That's good.
That was in 4 months. That's what happened.
Uh-huh.
This test that I had was done after only 2 months after the treatment I got.
Okay.
And in the test, it says that my EpCAM, my CD 133, my NANAG, PSMA, and PAN CK are all positive.
All right.
I think that she had the test done too soon after the treatment that I had, but I was just curious. I mean, it sounds like the Galleri test is not anything like this one.
No, it's very different.
We all have cancer cells in our system, but this one's supposed to test the stuff that's in my blood. But I don't know. Do you think she did it too soon and that it's really whacked out?
I would repeat it, yes. I mean, a PSA that is, what'd you say, 0.7, 0.8?
0.8.
Okay, 0.8 is low. I mean, anytime we get it less than 1, we're quite reassured. You know, normally, if people are going to die of a prostate cancer, we're looking at PSAs in the hundreds. You know,
oh, wow.
People
okay.
with 300, 400 before the tumor has gotten so big and spread so far that it's causing risk of dying. So, you know, when you're less than 1, this is a very good thing.
And he was a 4.2.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and 4.2 is not all that high.
Okay.
And that tells us that probably his tumor was not that big to start with, and probably was not that aggressive to start with. But once more, there are specific genetic tests. When you treat the cancer, when you've got a piece of the cancer, you can run a genetic analysis on it and see what markers. And that'll give you a very, very precise risk profile of how highly or how likely this particular tumor is to spread. So that's the good news. But yeah, your primary question, was it too soon? It's sooner than I like. The fact, though, that it dropped from over 4 to less than 1 is good news. But if it's been a few more months, you know, if we're now 4 to 6 months up the road, and I'd prefer 6 months, I'd probably repeat that test. And I might even check you again in a year. Because if things are starting to rise, you know, now we're worried. And we want to start looking for where are those cells, those tumors that we have missed that we want to go get.
Okay. Well, my Gleason for this was 3-4, and so everything was really low.
Yeah, so you have a total Gleason of 7, which is very low. I mean, statistically, just looking at big numbers, a Gleason of 7, if you never treated it, if you just left it alone, you got a 93% chance that you will grow old and die and it would never bother you. So it's that other 7% we worry about. 7% of the time, it'll grow fast and get you. But 93% of the time, it doesn't. So a low Gleason score is very reassuring. But I would still, we're worried about that other 7. So you want to follow it up and get your studies and be monitored. Okay?
Okay.
All right. You take care, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for the call, Lee. All right. We will continue with Leading Edge Medicine, and our phone lines are open for you. Here is the number to call about your health. What's going on in your body? What are you fighting? Maybe you're dealing with something big or a loved one and you'd like some answers. Give us a call at 1-800-465-8770. Now, it seems like prostate cancer is one of those things that we talk a lot about on the show.
It is the most common male cancer.
The most common, kind of like breast cancer is the one that we talk about with
women.
Yeah. But for men listening, what are some of those early signs that they should be watching for so that they can get to the doctor to get checked before it's...
Most of the time, there aren't any.
There aren't any with prostate, okay?
No. There's a lot of diseases that... You're either picked up with screening where the doctor is following you along. PSA, prostate-specific antigen, is a marker that tells us how metabolically active your prostate is. And if you've got a big prostate, you probably have a higher PSA, but that's just frequently a big prostate. Doesn't mean that you got a cancer. If you get an infection in the prostate, we call prostatitis, you can get a very rapid rise in PSA, and you don't have a cancer. You just got an infection.
And a scare.
But one of the things that can cause a rise in PSA is prostate cancer, because prostate cancer is metabolically more active than normal prostate tissue. And so if we see a rise in PSA, the question is, why is it rising? Mm. It might be cancer. It might be something else. We don't know till we check. But there's some really interesting statistics that came out of a study way back in the 1990s that we refer to as the Detroit study. And in Detroit, what they did was every male who, from about 18 up, who died, they did a step section of the prostate. They actually went in, removed his prostate, and did a very, very careful step section where they sliced it very thinly and examined the prostates under the microscope.
Okay.
And what they found was that in men in their 20s, they had about a 20% chance of finding a little focus of prostate cancer in their prostates.
Hmm.
In their 30s, it was 30%. In their 40s, it was 40%. In their 50s, it was 50%.
And in their 60s?
60s and 70s, it got up to about 70%.
Wow.
And then it seemed to kind of level off in the high 70s. But the point is that only about 8% of men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their life. And yet by my age, 76, I got about a 75% chance that if you were to take my prostate out, slice it up and look at it really carefully, I got about a 75% chance you'd find some prostate cancer in there. But it will never bother me. It's there.
It's just there.
But in most men, our immune systems suppress it.
Okay.
And it never causes trouble. The problem is what happens when the immune system fails to suppress it, and now it starts to grow and cause troubles, and now we find a growing prostate cancer. But what grew out of that study was the recognition that for most of medical history, we've been over-treating prostate cancer.
Mm.
Because if you examine a man and you biopsy him and you find a prostate cancer, no matter what the cancer was, a low Gleason, a medium Gleason, or whatever, men were treated aggressively. They all got surgery, they got radiation, yes. Their testosterone got ablated, all kinds of, and their lives went to pot.
That was
they
my
horrible
father.
Lifespans. And so We used to treat all prostate cancer as though it were an immediately life-threatening emergency, and we jumped on it with everything we knew how to do. We irradiated them, we surgeried them, we did all. Reality is, for most men, prostate cancer is not going to kill them. Most of us who are going to, if you look at us closely enough, you might find some. And as I said, if you're going to low-grade a Gleason 6 or 7, 93% of the chance you're going to grow old and die of something else, and the prostate's never going to give you grief. But once we find the cancer, everybody panics.
The word cancer is scary.
It's scary, yes. And so the trick is, now that we are aware of that, the research is now saying, okay, we need to sort out which of these cancers need aggressive therapy and which do not. And let's not attack men with aggressive therapies if they don't really need it. And that's why all these new genetic markers are so important. So now, if a guy's got a rising PSA, we go in, we find the tumor with the MRI, we do a directed biopsy, we send it for genetic analysis, and then the genetic analysis will tell us high risk, low risk. Low risk, sit tight, relax, watch it, see what happens over the next several years. High risk, get in and fix it.
Okay.
So that's the difference in now and just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to talk more about prostate cancer. John from Bellevue has a question. If you have a question on whatever topic it is that you're dealing with aging, we'd love to talk with you too. This is Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. I'm Lynette. We're here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, and we'll be right back. Stay right there. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. We'd love to talk with you. A half hour left of our show today. We're taking calls and the lines are open. Don't be shy. Give us a call. 800-465-8770 is the number. That's 1-800-465-8770. Dr. Jerry Mixon here. I'm Lynette. We're talking, let's see, John had a question. He's got two friends dealing with prostate cancer. That's what we've been discussing. One is has actual prostate cancer. The other going in to get tested for it. And John from Bellevue would like to know more about the Swedish cyber knife.
All right.
That sounds very sharp and very scary. So what is this?
Well, actually, a cyber knife is a kind of a fancy marketing term for a radiation therapy that basically is tightly focused, only hits a very small area at a time. So you have very precise tissue damage. It's not like the old days where you had to irradiate the prostate, and you burn the bladder, and you burn the bowel, and you had all kinds of scarring and urinary incontinence, et cetera, et cetera. It's really kind of fascinating. The newer MRIs, a 3 Tesla MRI, by the way, let me explain that term, I guess. MRIs, magnetic resonance imaging. And so they basically put you in a big, powerful, super cool magnet. And by switching the magnetic field back and forth and on and off and on and off very quickly, it makes every charged particle in your body vibrate, move back and forth, and those moving vibrations in a magnetic field produce electrical fields, and the computer measures them all.
Okay.
And actually makes you a picture of what's going on, so we can view. MRIs are their power is determined by the strength of their magnetic field.
Okay.
And the newest, most powerful ones are now 3 Teslas. They measure them in Teslas.
Okay.
Not the car.
I was going to say, you have 2 of those, doctor.
Yeah,
but not a 3 Tesla.
My wife and I each drive a Tesla. But no, these are named after Nikolai Tesla.
Okay.
And they are a unit of measurement of magnetic power. And so the standard machines have always been 1.5. They now have 3 Tesla machines. I understand there's a 4.5 or 5 that in research that they're trying to build now.
Wow.
But the 3 Tesla machines are so precise. You can visualize not just tumors, tissue swelling, amount of edema. Mm. You get very, very precise views of the tissue. So you can see any tumor in that prostate. You know, it used to be you had to just go in surgically and start whacking stuff out and hope you could get the tumor. Now we actually can see the tumors even when they're only a millimeter or two across.
Wow.
So little tiny tumors we can see, and they can be very precise about going in and only taking out the tissue they need to take out. They don't have to take out the whole prostate necessarily.
Okay.
And so, because the more prostate tissue you take out, the more complications, the more side effects, the more erectile dysfunction you may get, okay, more urinary incontinence, more leakage, you're having to wear a diaper, yada, yada, yada. So you don't want any more trauma than you have to have. On the other hand, you want to get rid of the tumor. After all,
yes.
We want to make sure we're saving somebody's life here. So it's a balance. And the CyberKnife is one of those devices that allows them to provide very precise radiation to a very specific area without damaging too much other tissue.
Mm.
Proton treatments are also another form of radiation that can be used that doesn't seem to whiz on through and damage other tissue. Once you've isolated exactly where the tumor is, sometimes they can go in surgically and just do a laser ablation and just destroy the parts of the prostate that contain the tumors. So there's a lot of stuff we can do now that is radically different from when I was a lad in medicine nearly 50 years ago.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
The stuff we used to do is so barbaric compared to the way we can approach it now. Now, unfortunately, there are still doctors that are living in the past and are...
Want to just do everything.
Yeah, they either want to do everything or they use kind of clumsy tools. So you want somebody that specializes in this, that is up to date, that's using the newest, most precise tools available, that's going to do the least trauma to your body in the process of getting rid of the tumor, but will be effective at getting rid of the tumor.
Okay.
And that's the trade-off.
And that's what you want. So it sounds like the using the Swedish CyberKnife is a good plan.
Is one potential tool.
Okay, that's just one.
But where, you know, which of the many tools now available depends on the doctors, the institution, what tools they have available. Not everybody's got a CyberKnife. Not everybody, you know, has a 3 Tesla MRI. So you want to be at a place that has the best, newest tools and doctors with the latest, newest knowledge.
Very good. Well, we've talked about the best. Why don't we talk about the things you don't want? Like if the doctor just says, hey, let's do this. Old school and may not be as effective, like just an ultrasound.
Yeah, ultrasounds are okay, but they're really not as precise as the MRI.
MRI.
Yeah,
okay.
MRI is the most precise we've got. But even there, sometimes you can't use an MRI. You know, I have so much old shrapnel from my military days.
Yes.
I've got steel scattered hither and yon. They wouldn't do an MRI on me for decades.
Wow.
But now I've had a couple of MRIs. And they're able to shield, and they're able to, you know, to compensate for the metal resonance that my metallic body shows
up. Yes.
So, again, the technology is improving, and you just want to get people that are really, really good at it. And clearly, I'm not. I am not a prostate doctor. I am an aging doctor. Because I treat a lot of older men, I'm familiar with the literature, because I treat a lot of older women, I'm familiar with a lot of the literature that women come across. But my knowing about it and my being able to do it are very different things. So,
okay.
So I'm willing to answer your questions to the best of my knowledge, but you really want to get to the guys that this is what they do. This is all they do. Okay. You want to figure out how to handle the problems of aging, you want to have a longer, healthier, more robust, more joyous life, you come see me and my doctors at Longevity Medical Clinic. You've got a prostate cancer? Well, I'm not the guy to treat that.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Okay, waiting for the next call at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. All right, we've talked about the prostate and those issues and the prostate cancer. How about let's focus on breast cancer? We have a lot of questions about that. One of the things that ladies will call up, and we've had some men, because men can get breast cancer too.
Men can get it, although pretty rare, about 200 or more women for every man.
Mm, okay.
And many of the men are actually a genetic aberrancy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and I'm going to kind of divert this to our what is a man, what is a woman routine.
Yes.
You know, what is... I was appalled when a Supreme Court justice recently swore under oath that she couldn't tell a man from a woman because she didn't have a degree in biology.
Wow. Yeah. I don't have a degree in biology.
Well, I know.
But I know.
Well, I know she had three children, mm-hmm. you know, and that creature who put his penis in her vagina, that's a man. You know, the fact that she's got the vagina and the uterus and can bear children, she's a woman.
And she's pretty on simple. The Supreme Court.
And... Yeah.
Okay.
But there are three criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Human. Adult, male, man. Human, adult, female, woman. Human, immature male, boy. Human, immature female, girl. It's not that complex. But now we come down to what makes you male and female. Now it gets a little more complex. Most people are familiar with the XY chromosomes. Two X's, you're female. An X and a Y, you're male. Almost all the time. But about 1 in 50,000 men is male without an X chromosome.
Oh.
Because the SRY gene, which is the gene that actually provides the physiologic maleness, is on one of the short arm of the Y chromosome, and it can break off and get translocated to an X.
Wow, okay.
And so this is then somebody who has two X's, but one of their X's has the SRY male gene on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they produce a male, but he's a male without the full Y chromosome.
And how would he know
part
this?
Of it. He doesn't.
He wouldn't, okay.
Except that... His genitals tend to be much smaller and less mature than the average, and he tends to not be fertile. So he's male. He has penis, he has testicles, he has male characteristics. He carries the gene for a man, but he doesn't carry the rest of the Y chromosome, and so he's lacking in fertility, and his genitalia tend to be smaller.
Okay.
And so this is about one man in 50,000.
Okay. So this is quite rare.
Quite rare.
And then he may go in to get tested to see why. When he finds out.
And usually what will happen is this guy, he can't have babies. And he's having sex. He's making love to his wife. And she's not getting pregnant. And they go in and they do the genetic testing. And they say, oops, we got a problem here. Okay. And so it does happen. Now, are they male? Yes, they are male. Because they got the male genome that carries the thing. It's just the gene has translocated, and it's not where it usually is. And the fact that it's not where it usually is causing other problems, such as fertility and some increased risk of breast cancer.
Oh, okay.
Which is why what you said triggered that. Males can get breast cancer. Yes, they can. But if I've got a male with breast cancer, the first thing I ask is, do you have children? Because if he is a male with breast cancer who's never fathered a child, then there's a high probability that we have a genetic abnormality of some sort.
And is that reversible?
No.
No. Okay.
No, you're made the way you're made.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And one of the tricks in life is to accept who we are and what we are. We don't have to like everything that we are. You know, tall people sometimes want to be shorter. Short people want to be taller. Blondes want to be brunettes. Girls with big breasts want to have little breasts,
yes.
And vice versa.
Curly hair wants straight
hair.
That's
right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we are what we are. And one of the keys in life to have a happy life is to accept what you really and truly are and make the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
Minimize your weaknesses, maximize your strengths, but accept reality. You are what you are, whether it's really what you would like to be or not.
There you go. All right. You're listening to Dr. Jerry Mixon. The show is Leading Edge Medicine, and you can be a part of it by giving us a call at 1-800-465-8770. We'll be talking to email in just a moment. Stay right there. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Last few minutes of the show. If you want to get in on the calls, 1-800.
Well, I want to get up and dance.
Yeah,
like that
I know. Oh, Billy Ray. Oh, Billy Ray.
Ray Cyrus.
Oh, I met him once. Oh, and that was all I needed. It was his first year, and that was the song he had on the radio. And he came to an event, and of course, I was there. And
yeah. You were a fangirl.
I was fangirling, and oh, he had the cutest mullet. Woohoo. 1-800-465-8770. On the phone, email. Hi there, email. How are you?
Fine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Last week, Dr. Gilbert talked about recessive corneas to the brain, and he said it wasn't an eye situation. It was more of a medical problem with a regular doctor. So I was wondering what Dr. Mixon's opinion is of recessive eyeball.
Well, it is, I think, more of a genetic trait. You know, some people have prominent eyes and some have somewhat recessed eyes. They have these kind of deep sockets. I'm not aware that it has any real importance except cosmetically. You know, it depends on what your taste in people is. You know, if you are male, it will accentuate your brow ridges. You know, we men, as opposed to women, one of our physical characteristics is we tend to have more prominent brow ridges. And they kind of hang over our eyes and make our eyes look more hooded and recessed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and most women find that male brow ridge to be quite attractive.
Yes.
And women don't have that thick ridge, and so, you know, their eyes tend to be more prominent and look bigger and brighter, and so we guys kind of learn to look for girls with big, bright eyes.
There you go.
You know? Personal taste is, of course, I'm quite fond of Asian girls with those beautiful epicanthal folds. That's right. Like my wife.
You know? Yeah. And does your daughter have them too?
My daughter has a little bit. Yeah. She's our little hybrid, of course. I'm about as Caucasian Viking as you come. And my wife is Han Chinese. So my daughter is kind of a mix of us. Yeah.
Okay.
She's got her mother's beautiful brown eyes, but not quite as much of an epicanthal fold as mom has got.
Okay.
And her hair was blonde as a little girl, and now it's kind of a brown.
Okay.
So, you know, as opposed to mom's darker hair.
There you go.
But it's mostly a matter of personal taste. I don't think it has any real physiologic importance. Doesn't make you smarter, faster, stronger, you know, or anything like that. It's just a matter of, do you like how you look or not?
It's just different.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. Mixon, I do remember that Dr. Michael Gilbert last week was talking about the bottom lids that they would pull down. And I wonder if
Well, and there's a couple of things, too. People with high thyroid levels actually get protein buildup behind their eyes and pushes the eye out.
Oh, which makes them kind of the Monty Feldman
Yes, that's
eyes.
Right. Precisely. So you get the Feldman look with the very, very prominent eyeballs kind of sticking out, and that's due to protein that's laid down behind the eyeball because of the high thyroid levels. Many older people, the upper lids will sag and come down over their eye to some extent, and they kind of get this heavy-lidded, half-asleep look.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Okay.
Which only becomes important if the lids are covering enough of the pupil that is interfering with your vision. And then the lower lid can actually as the muscles age and get weaker, can actually turn out. And then the pink on the inside will now roll out and be visible.
Okay. Yes.
And that can be unsettling to some people because now all of a sudden you're seeing this redness along the bottom and people say, wait a minute, what's going on there? You know. And again, it's a common issue with aging and loss of muscle tone. As we get older, all of our muscles get weaker. And this is just one of those. So, but there is a little surgical procedure can be done. The cosmetic surgeons and some ophthalmologists or dermatologists will go in and, you know, tweak that and pull it out and make it nice and straight again.
So. I think I remember Kenny Rogers getting that procedure or something done to his eyes because all of a sudden, you know, he had, you know, nice eyes before, but then all of a sudden they were, woo, so different, you know, bright,
you know,
wide open.
I have to say I never looked at Kenny Rogers that closely. Not my type. But I'll defer to you on Kenny
yes.
Rogers' eyes.
Yes. Is that helpful for you, Emil?
Yes, that was very helpful. And a matter of fact, Dr. Gilbert said it, if it wasn't addressed, it could become very serious. Yeah. But I couldn't get in to see the doctor until the 12th of July. So I thought I'd get Dr. Mixon's opinion on it, too.
Yeah, well, if I recall the call correctly, it's what Lynette brought up. And that was just that eversion.
The lower
lid that's kind of turning out. And it can result in the eye getting quite dry, which can bother the cornea and cause you to get, you know, corneal abrasions and erosions and so on. But generally, July is probably plenty soon enough to get it fixed. You might just want to get some little drops to keep the eye moist at night or even a little lubricating gel to put in on that lower lid when you go to sleep at night so that it doesn't let the eyeball dry out during the night during your sleep.
What's the technical term for that situation?
I'm trying to remember. Not eutropion, but I don't remember. Okay, Michael, Dr. Gilbert,
that's
if
right.
You're listening, call in and tell us.
Thank you very much for the help.
All right. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
You bet.
Right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Looking at my notes from last week to see. It did have a name. He had a fancy
it
name
did,
for that.
It did, but I can't for the life of me remember it.
No, and then he also had a procedure, like you said, that was something that they could do to fix that. All right, just a few minutes left of our show. Dr. Mixon, what should we discuss as we're getting ready to hit summer and Father's Day tomorrow?
Well, summer, of course, is more sunburn and set us up for skin cancers. So let's avoid that.
Yes.
Everybody go out and get your sunblock.
Mm-hmm. Wear that sunblock.
And we have nice sunblocks now that don't make you look greasy. They are, you know, basically oil-free. You put them on. You don't even know you're wearing them, but they do a pretty good job of keeping that sun from baking your skin.
Yes.
Because I don't want any of my listeners showing up with skin cancers.
That's right. Go see your dermatologist if you have any questions. I was just there 2 weeks ago, and he found a few precancerous things. Took them right off.
Yep.
Left me with, I looked like I had chicken pox with lots of little dots around my hairline.
Did he freeze them or cook them?
He froze them,
yep.
Cauterized a couple of things, but I had a high pain tolerance, or so I thought. But I didn't hit him. Yeah,
that's
so
good. Thou shalt not hit thy doctor.
No,
that's...
but it's important to get in because you don't want those to grow. And you've had a few things taken off as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I just had a little skin cancer from my right forearm.
Mm-hmm.
It, oddly enough, formed in an old gunshot wound scar. I had
a
big, long wound in my forearm from a bullet in my somewhat adventurous youth.
Yes.
And then I got a skin cancer in the scar. So now I have a scar in my scar.
So if you got something growing or those ridges that are what is that they say, uneven margins?
Yes.
Anything you're questioning, then get into the doctor.
Somebody
ask
take
them.
A look and see.
Yeah.
That's right.
Have them look and see.
A lot of it's just cosmetic, but, you know, if it's not, let's get it fixed.
Yeah, get it taken off of. Okay, so check those moles and keep the sunscreen on and do not go out there to get the tan. I'm glad now that I wasn't able to tan as a kid.
I wish I had not as a kid. I've got a lot of old brown spots scattered all over my torso. I spent a lot of time without a shirt in the tropical sun when I was bouncing around Asia. And of course, when I was a kid, we used to go out on the beach, you know, and we put coconut oil on ourselves.
Oh, yes. And
tin foil to make sure we baked evenly.
And sun in our hair. So Dr. Michael Gilbert heard our bat signal, and he is on the line. Dr. Gilbert, what is the fancy name of...
What is the fancy name for that the outturned lower lid?
You had it. You were so close, Jerry. Ectropion.
Ectropion.
Ectropia.
Okay.
And from the Latin en is entropion, would be when it's when the muscles are torquing it in, so you have eyelashes scraping the surface of the eye. The risk of the ectropion is that mucous membrane becomes keratinized, and there's an increased risk because of the exposure, increased risk particularly of corneal infections. And you're quite right. Lubrication at night till you get it fixed. But it's best to use an ointment because anything water-based is not going to last all night.
Yeah. The only thing about the ointments, you know, they work great because they stay in, but then you wake up in the morning and your eyes are kind of goopy.
A little oily.
So you kind of do have to. So you kind of got to wash it off.
And a little heat helps to melt that, and you're back to normal. Until you get it fixed.
Yep. Well, hopefully he'll get it fixed next month.
Yes,
you know?
He has an appointment July.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call in, Michael. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Okay. Yep. Bye-bye, sir.
Thank you so much. All right. An email. Thank you for your call. It's good talking about the eyes today and eye health and sun and wear that sunscreen and don't use the stuff that's been underneath your counter for about 5-10 years.
No.
It does expire. They're better ones, like Dr. Mixon said. Oh, well, that's the show for today. You want to reach us. You want to become part of Longevity Medical Clinic. This is what you do. You give us a call and schedule that free health analysis appointment. We would love to see you, love to talk with you about what's ailing you and see what we can do to help you as you age to become stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier. Here is that number to call. It's 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 1-866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, lmclinic.com. All right, we'll see you next week. Have a wonderful weekend. Have a wonderful Father's Day or Grandfather's Day. And we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to Leading Edge Medicine.